Welcome back to Sound Effect on KPLU. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and our show today is about war and peace. Vanessa Davids comes from an Army family. Her brother, her dad, and her grandfather, they were all in the Army. But she had never expressed much interest. She was a natural resources major at Washington State University. So it was a bit of a shock when, after college, she enlisted. And not only that, she joined the Marine Corps the year after the U.S. invaded Iraq.
I figured that joining the military at that time, it was pretty much guaranteed that I was going to deploy. And so if I was going to go over there, I wanted to be able to talk to the people that I was going to be in country with. And so I wanted to learn Arabic.
Vanessa Davids spent 5 years in the Marines as an Arabic language translator. And in 2007, she deployed to Alhambra province. And there, even though she did most of her work on base behind the wire, she got a glimpse into the mindset of the enemy that few Americans ever will.
I worked 7 days a week, 12, 15-hour days, doing translation work. And we were doing threat warning reporting for the units in our area.
So people were intercepting like radio communications and stuff like that, and you were translating the recordings?
A variety of media, yes. If it can be recorded, that was something that we could capture and look for intelligence.
Did you also have to wade through a bunch of really mundane stuff?
Yes. There is the mundane where, you know, they're talking about market prices. They're talking about the temperature, whether they have gas for their generators, the wives complaining to their sister about their husbands, or idle chit-chat.
And when you would get to an important recording, a recording that had intelligence value or some kind of tactical value, can you talk about what that was like?
So you could usually tell something bad was probably going to be discussed because people would lower their voices and whisper. For example, they start talking about really quietly about fruit, like pomegranates. Yeah, and where are you putting the pomegranates? And I'll be there to pick up the pomegranates at, you know, 7 o'clock tonight, and don't let anybody see you pick them up. And you knew immediately pomegranates might be a code word for either grenades or some kind of explosive device.
So besides those kinds of operations that you're trying to get wind of, what other kinds of important communications would you wind up translating?
We translated some very challenging material as well that I hadn't expected. I hadn't really expected the video component. We would do things to look at ransom videos, kidnapping videos. We also dealt with the less pleasant beheadings, torture, child pornography, that sort of thing as well. I would say that was my most challenging work emotionally.
Having to look at that stuff and at least, you know, listen carefully enough to translate it accurately, what was that like for you?
I have very specific memories of that time, things that still bother me today. I went from thinking that the world was like this really good place and there's a few bad things happen, but, you know, bad is bad and it happens over in this other place, to really having a darker view of the world for a long time.
Well, plus being a translator, it seems like it's a really unique position to be in. I mean, you're almost inhabiting the words of the people who are speaking. And if they're doing something awful, like that's a weirdly intimate kind of thing, right?
It is intimate. There are certain words that you're trying to translate, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's a literal translation of the word. And you come across this word and you're like, how is it being used in this context? And then that realization will hit you and you go, oh God, that's horrific.
You also must have to put yourself in their shoes a little bit to understand what they mean when they say certain things.
Yeah. Context is everything. You have to be thinking the way that the person is thinking. And that having to label children in pornographic terms was one of the hardest things, I would say, for me.
I can imagine. What was it like as you wound your deployment down and then got out of the military?
It was challenging coming home because at the time I was married. My spouse was also in the Marine Corps. We'd had back-to-back deployments, and so we hadn't seen each other in so long. And going home to see him for a month after almost a year and a half of no contact, I was very nervous.
Did you find that you were different people when you guys got back together?
We were both very different people. His deployment had been extremely challenging. So coming back, he didn't want me to talk about my deployment at all. he had no ears or time for that. It was isolating, very isolating. I only had one person that I really felt that I could talk to, and it was the woman that I'd worked beside, a fellow Marine.
How did you cope then?
I was very angry and withdrawn.
So besides what you were dealing with at home, do you feel like you had a very different experience as a female veteran from the men?
I do. On our small camp, there are maybe a half dozen women total. Everywhere you went, you were an extreme minority. You were stared at. We used to joke that when you'd walk into the chow hall, it was like the scene in Finding Nemo where all the seagulls look and say, mine, 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 because everybody would turn and stare at you because you're the only woman there. And so you're dealing with all of this violent graphic material. You're constantly being stared at, and you don't have anybody to relate to. Even my fellow women that I worked with, we ended up isolating ourselves to a certain degree. There was so much to deal with, and you kind of needed to insulate yourself to protect yourself.
And what about when you were back stateside? Do you think being a female veteran is very different after a deployment?
It is. You come back and you go to the bars and people are like, oh, you just came back from a deployment. That's awesome. And they're getting their drink spot and they're being congratulated and, hey, you did great. And for me, you can't tell that I'm a veteran. I don't have a shaved head. I don't stand out. We are usually thought of as the girlfriends or wives.
How did you feel when somebody would mistake you for...
Pissed off. Very pissed off. Because especially coming back from that kind of work, it's not that I wanted to be, you know, congratulated. I just wanted to be respected like my peers. And the other thing on base, our experiences were often downplayed. I would try and talk to other male Marines about what I'd done and what I'd gone through, and it was always dismissed. Oh, it couldn't be as hard as you're saying it was. At least you didn't get blown up. And I'd say, yeah, that's very true. And I didn't have that happen, and I'm so grateful. But the work that I did was still very challenging.
Do you still do Arabic language translation?
I do not. I have no desire to do it. I do keep Arabic news on my phone, so I'll read the news or the headlines in Arabic occasionally, but I can't do that kind of work anymore, and I'm afraid of the person that I would become if I did that kind of work.
So you talked about, particularly right after you got back, feeling pretty angry and
yes,
maybe resentful. How have your feelings evolved over the years since then?
It took several years to get beyond the anger, I would say. I used to joke, well, not really joke, and say, just turn it into a glass parking lot, because I don't feel like anything we did there accomplished anything. Just nuke it, lay it flat. I was angry at the whole region. I'd lost friends there. I'd watched my then husband change into a person that I hardly recognized, and I was angry. But it actually took therapy, and it took some medication before I was able to come out of that dark hole.
Where are you at now with it?
I'm good. I'm able to look back on it and say, you know, that was a very formative time period for me. I've had people say, oh, if you could do it over, would you do it over? And I'd say, yeah, knowing what I know, I'd still go back and do it again. Even the dark period afterwards, I think it had value. I'm much more grateful for beauty and for peaceful things in my life.
What's an example of something that you appreciate or really savor now?
I really savor the innocence of my children. I have two kids, a 5-year-old girl and a 7-year-old boy, and I look at their complete innocence of the world, and I'm grateful for that.
Well, Vanessa Davids is a writer and a Marine Corps veteran, and she joined us from Portland, Oregon. Thank you so much for talking with us, Vanessa.
Thank you. I'm glad to have the time to talk about it. It's not something that I talk about very much at all, actually. So to be able to speak about it is refreshing. Thank you. I'll probably go into my car and cry a little bit. That's okay, too. It was just to have somebody ask. Sorry.
It really means so much to us. Thank you.
Thank you.